Last Monday, everywhere I went, there was one topic which was being discussed more than any other. I wonder if you can guess what it was. No, not the Labour Party conference, nor was it the rights and wrongs and the mess that we call Brexit, but no, it was Bodyguard, the BBC One drama. Just give me a little wave if you watched it too, a good number. For the last 6 weeks, as many as 10 million people have been tuning in to follow the fate of David Budd, bodyguard to the Home Secretary. And as the last episode aired, people were glued to their screens to find out if the Home Secretary was still alive, what the security services were up to, whether David Budd was guilty or innocent, and who the inside man or woman at the Met might be. Like many other people, we also watched Bodyguard at our house. And I have to say that I was rather disappointed with the final episode. In fact, I would go so far as to say I was a bit cross about it. There was a point where I went, "Give me my phone! I need to text Claire, who's a writer." It made me cross because there were plot holes, improbable events, and some very clunky dialogue. I am quite a harsh TV critic, I hasten to add. I wonder what you thought of it, if you watched it. Sometimes the end of a story can be a great climax, sometimes it can be a huge disappointment, or it can offer an unexpected twist. Well, for the last 4 weeks, we've been looking at the story of Jonah, and as Sarah said today, we've reached Jonah chapter 4, the end of the story. And it is pretty clear that Jonah is both angry and disappointed with the way that this story ends. After running away and being swallowed by a great fish, Jonah eventually did what God had been asking him to do. He went to Nineveh, an enemy city, and he preached against them. He proclaimed 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. Somewhat surprisingly, the Ninevites heeded Jonah's warning. They turned from their evil ways and they turned to God. So why is Jonah so disappointed? Because as far as I can see, his mission has been a success. Well, the answer comes in verse 2. Jonah says to God, "This is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, Lord, take away my life," as he stamps his foot, "for it is better for me to die than to live." I can't help noticing it's sort of melodramatic dialogue, much in the style of Bodyguard, in fact. But what it seems is that Jonah is angry because God hasn't destroyed the Ninevites. I wonder what you think of Jonah for that. It's very easy, I guess, to say, "Oh, Jonah, you're so not, you know, following the plot here." But actually, I think Jonah is rather normal in this regard. Because the Ninevites had committed countless war crimes against Jonah's people. So he wanted them held to justice, and he wanted them punished. And I think I would too. Earlier this week, you may have heard on the news that a beluga whale was spotted in the Thames close to Gravesend. Yippee, I thought, I'm preaching on Jonah! On the one hand, it created great excitement because it seems quite incredible to see such an amazing creature in a place like the Thames estuary. But on the other hand, it was actually rather sad because the Thames is not the natural habitat of the beluga whale, which means that that whale was lost and in danger. It was in entirely the wrong place. We're told in Jonah that he sat down outside the city waiting to see what would happen. He warned the Ninevites that they were lost and in danger, and he wanted a front row view when God razed Nineveh to the ground. The thing is that, like the beluga whale, Jonah was in the wrong place. It was Jonah who was lost and in danger, and God really needed to show him why. As Jonah sat waiting in the hot sun, God sent this amazing plant to shelter him. The next day, and I love this bit in the story, God sent a worm to eat the plant, and suddenly Jonah was exposed. And the conditions out in the desert were extreme. They are. And so Jonah was so hot and overcome that he wanted to die. And this time I don't think it was melodrama. This time it was an indication of what it is like to be in the desert when the hot wind blows up. So what God is doing with this plant is showing Jonah what life feels like when you are protected with God's grace and love, and what life feels like when God's grace and love is taken away. And so without that protection, Jonah himself becomes subject to God's judgment. What do you want, Jonah? Do you want the protection of the grace of God, or don't you? And so for me, this story comes down to one key question. What kind of God do you want? What kind of God do you want? Jonah wants a God who is like him. He wants a God who sides with him. He wants a God who does what he wants. Jonah wants a God who will punish his enemies and treat him with special favor. And I suspect that deep down, we all want a God like that. We all want a God who will destroy our enemies and be on our side. But God says to him, "You've been concerned about this plant, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. And should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh?" The implication is that God is the creator, the author of life, and God's concern is for the whole of his creation, not just a few people. That he treats all those he's made the same. So what kind of God do you want, Jonah? Do you want a God who exposes his people to the hot wind of his judgment? Or do you want a God who is slow to anger and abounding in love? It's another way of saying, do you want a God of law, or do you want a God of grace? The thing is that I think it was easier for Jonah to believe in a God of law, a God who is predictable and black and white, who punishes wrongs and rewards rights. It was far more frightening to believe in a God of grace, because a God of grace might change his heart and turn his heart towards his enemies. I wonder how you see God. Do you see a God of law, a God of black and white, rights and wrongs? Or do you see a God of grace? We're all in church, so actually we all know the correct answer. Oh, he's a God of grace. But I think in reality, many of us relate to him or her as a God of law. For the vast majority of people, God is still an angry old man, and we are the recalcitrant child. It's an image of God that casts a long and deeply unhelpful shadow over our relationship with our Creator. So what kind of God do you want? What kind of God do you want? The God in this story is slow to anger and abounding in love. And I wonder if you are willing to believe in that kind of God. Are you willing to take a risk and open your life to the God of grace? Because nobody wants to open their life to the God of law. Because if you open your life, the God of grace will change your heart and change your life. The God of grace will change the way you see yourself, the way you see other people, and ultimately it will change the world. Because grace isn't just about transforming individual lives. It's about transforming our world and bringing about the change that we long to see. Jonah wanted God to punish the Ninevites for their evil behavior. He was angry and disappointed with God when God didn't do that. But look what happened instead. God challenged the Ninevites. The Ninevites turned from their evil ways. They turned to God, and in so doing, they turned their backs on evil. The very thing that Jonah wanted to end was ended, and it is grace not law, that brings an end to evil. Last night I was at an event at Emmanuel Pentecostal Church on Lehigh Road, so a very local church, one of our neighbours. And it was a launch event for an initiative called Fusion Rise and Go, that's seeking to end knife crime and violence against young people. And what is interesting about this initiative is that it's a multi-faith group of Christians and Muslims working together. There are plenty of places around the world where even now Christians and Muslims regard one another as the enemy. Some of that is due to history, recent history. Some of it is due to politics and economics and the use and abuse of power. But last night I was moved to tears watching Christians and Muslims who might regard one another with suspicion, working in partnership, treating one another as friends, and talking with passion about stopping violence against young black people in particular. We are working together with people that we might want to keep a distance from for the sake of one another's children. The grace of God does not destroy the enemy. The grace of God breaks down barriers between enemies. The grace of God turns our hearts to one another. The grace of God creates solidarity between people, such that I care about someone else's child. The grace of God seeks to end evil. The grace of God pursues justice and righteousness. The story of Jonah is about so much more than a whale swallowing a man. The story of Jonah is about the great themes of the gospel: rescue and redemption, grace, forgiveness, and transformation. And it's a story that hints at an even greater story to come, that will come just a few chapters later in the New Testament. The end of Bodyguard was frankly a disappointment to me. Let's hope Vanity Fair does not disappoint in a similar way. But Jonah is not a story that disappoints. The gospel of Jesus is not a story that disappoints. So what do you want? The God of law or the God of grace? Because I think this is a story about a God of grace. And so I just want to say, stop running away. Stop running away and be welcomed home to the God of grace. Amen.